Okay, so I said, well, city life is very fast-paced. I talked about meditation on patience. So would I explain more? Patience, in a Buddhist sense, has a specific meaning. It's more like being resolute, being firm, being unperturbed. And there's three things that we cultivate patience in relationship to. One is adversaries. In other words, when we've been harmed, when other people who have hurt us, and there we cultivate the patience of not retaliating. The second is patience in terms of the environment, or in terms of patience with suffering. So we may encounter suffering in the environment that we live in, or our body itself is the environment in which our mind lives may be sick. So being patient and unperturbed when we're ill. Yeah. And then the third is the patience to realize that all phenomena are empty of self. Okay, and cultivating that wisdom. So in a Buddhist sense, patience doesn't mean just the patience to wait for somebody. But it's the patience is having an unperturbed mind. So in terms of busy city life, if your main concern is stress because of the busyness of life, then slow your life down and choose what's important to do and do that and leave everything else aside. Because I think one thing that happens in a busy city life, it's like I was saying, we have so many external stimuli and we're bombarded by so many things telling us we should go here, we should buy this, we should do that. And then we start thinking, oh, I have to do all of this. So then we're so busy because we got to go here and we got to go there and our friend's doing this and that friend's doing that and we have to learn this and this and this. And we feel like, my life is like, you know, there's too many things to do. But the thing is that we're the ones that make our lives busy. We don't have to do all those things. You know, all these things that we say, I have to do. Ask yourself if you really have to do them. The only thing we actually have to do in life is die. That's the only thing that's required. The only thing that's for certain. Everything else we choose to do. So I think rather than saying, I have to do this, we need to be honest and say, I choose to do this. And if upon looking at it, you're not really happy that you're so busy doing that, then make a different choice. Choose not to do that certain thing. Okay, so it's coming down to the thing of contentment again, yeah? And being content with who we are, making our choices wisely, setting our priorities clearly, and not feeling like we have to be everyone and everything, you know, and become so stressed out in the process of it. I think, you know, one part of Buddhist practice that is very important for me, and I think for everybody, is learning to set our priorities. In other words, what is important for me to do? And what is not important for me to do? Because, you know, we tend to feel, especially about our work, oh, I've got to do this, and then I've got to close that deal, and I've got to work overtime here, and then I've got to do this, and I've got to do that. Now, we hear very often at the time of death that people kind of review their life and they have regrets about certain things that they did or did not do. Have you ever heard of anybody dying with the regret that they should have worked more overtime? Nobody ever dies that way, do they? You know, imagine somebody on their deathbed. Darn, I should have worked a 60-hour week instead of a 40-hour week. What a failure I was. Huh? Nobody dies with that regret. So if we don't die regretting that we didn't work overtime, why do we push ourselves to, you know, damage our health and damage our families for a little bit extra money? It doesn't make any sense, does it? It's better to be content, you know, have more time to spend with your family and your children so you can raise your children to be good human beings. You know, you may not have the fanciest furniture and the best flat, but you're content with what you have, and that contentment is the real riches. Okay? So here, in this kind of thing, you've set your priorities more clearly, you know, that your priorities are living your life in, you know, in an ethical way, spending time with your family, doing some Dharma practice. You go to work because you need money to live, and it's a way to contribute to the benefit of society. But your career is not everything about your life. And I think that's really important, because people just get way too wound up thinking that, you know, the whole meaning of my life is my career and how much money I make and how much I go up the corporate ladder and all this kind of stuff. And now at the end of the day, it's gone, isn't it? So I think, you know, when we set our priorities, when we wake up in the morning and we think, now, what is most important to do today? Now, I come up with three things, and you know, you might want to write these down, and then in the morning, think about them every morning, generate your motivation every morning. Okay, so what's the most important thing to do every day? Most important thing to do every day is not to harm anybody. So in the morning, you know, before we even get out of bed, when we think, today, you know, the most important that I'm going to do today is not harm anybody. As much as possible, I'm going to refrain from harming. Through what I do, through what I say, you know, saying bad things to or about somebody else, or pestering them. And also to avoid harming them through what I think, to stop my mind if I start getting into a really negative thought pattern about somebody. Okay, second most important thing to do each day is to help others as much as we can. So remember yesterday I was talking about helping in your family, for example, by coming down to breakfast and smiling and saying good morning instead of, you know, and I talked about looking your spouse in the eyes with affection, looking your children in the eyes with affection, you know, taking time to communicate with the people that you care about. I spoke about, you know, before you walk in at the end of the day, letting go of, you know, the stress of the day and really thinking, I'm going to be with the people I care about, so I'm going to be kind to them. Okay, so having that motivation as much as possible to be a benefit. You can also be a benefit to the people in your workplace. Remember I spoke about, you know, being friendly to people in your workplace or taking in some kind of snacks and sharing it with everybody. Talking to people you wouldn't normally talk to at work. So that's a way of extending help and benefit in your mind if you have that motivation. And then the third important thing is to bear in mind the bodhicitta, the aspiration for enlightenment. Okay? That mind that wants to become fully enlightened, wants to attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all beings most effectively. And so to generate the motivation, you know, this is my real motivation for being alive. Everything I do today, you know, should have this motivation as part of it. And if you generate this positive motivation with these three things, not harming, being of benefit, and holding the aspiration for enlightenment, the bodhicitta, if you generate this at the beginning of every day, your whole day is going to go much better because you've started it off thinking about something very wonderful that's going to enrich your heart, enrich your mind, and make you happy. you know, and that's a much better motivation to get you out of bed than, you know, I mean, what's our usual thought when we wake up in the morning? Oh, I want to sleep more. You know? But starting out the day like that, or, oh, I've got to go to bed, I've got to go to work, I've got to go to school. You know, if you start the day with that kind of thought, then your whole day is going to be kind of, But if you, you know, deliberately cultivate a good motivation, you know, put some energy into thinking positive thoughts and cultivating noble aspirations, and it turns your whole life around. Okay? So, you know, in that regard, this whole thing about setting priorities is very, very important. You know, most important is not harm, to be a benefit, and to aspire for enlightenment. Then, within that context, okay, what am I going to do today to live according to those three purposes? You know, do I have to go out and, you know, go to this, you know, do I have to do blah, 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 blah? What is really important for me to do to keep in line with my motivation? And to let go of the idea that we should be able to do everything that we think we'd like to do, or be everything that we wish we'd like to be. One of my, you know how we usually say, don't just sit there, do something? One of my friends wrote a book, a Buddhist friend, that said, don't just do something, sit there. And the idea is, you know, take time to do our meditations, you know? Take time to nourish our heart. Don't just run around and do this and that like we're living, you know, on automatic. But sit there. Become your own friend. Now look at your mind and heart. Cultivate your noble aspirations and your positive emotions. Yes?
Retribution. Something bad happened to the family. Is it retribution to the family because of action?
No, no, no. Everybody experiences the result of their own karma. So if one family did something harmful, if the other family didn't, if the rest of the members didn't create some kind of negative karma in the past, they're not going to experience the result of the harmful deeds of one family member. Okay, we only experience the results of the causes we've created. Is that answering her question?
I think
that's answering
her question.
Okay. Oh, okay. So if somebody's a good person and they die early, does it have to do with the family's karma? Well, that person died early because of some karma in the past, probably interfering with other beings' lives. And then the other family members have created the karma somehow to lose somebody who's very near and dear to them. Okay. You didn't create the karma that made somebody die. Your karma doesn't make somebody else die. But your karma puts you in the situation of experiencing suffering because you lose somebody that you care about. But let's also remember that death is certain in life, and sometime or another you're going to have to separate from the people that you love. Okay? Death does not mean failure. Death does not mean, you know, evil. Death is, as soon as we're born, we're heading towards it. It's just nature. Okay?
Mm-hmm. How do you teach a miserly person to be generous?
Okay, how do you teach a miserly person to be generous? Bring them to a Buddhist course. Yeah? Because I don't know if they're going to listen to you or not. You know, often we don't, about things like this, we don't necessarily listen to relatives. But sometimes if a stranger says something, or if they read something, you know, that the Buddha said, it may make them think a little bit about it.
But is it a kind of karma, that bad karma that is created, that, you know, the sign comes back here is, you stinch, I'll splurge for you?
Everybody has their own karma, you know, it's because karma is a very complicated situation. I can't talk about the karma of a specific instance. Okay. The most important thing, before you start trying to solve all your friends' problems, yeah, because I'm sure our question and answer session can really, you know, I have a friend, you know, whose husband cheats on her. I have a friend whose wife doesn't cook him dinner. I have a friend with a bad temper. I have a friend whose children are lazy. I have a friend whose parents don't treat him right. What do you think I'm going to say? What about yourself? Exactly. What about your own faults? What about your own problems? Before we start trying to solve the problems of everybody else around us and correct all of their faults, yeah, we need to identify and correct our own. Okay? And often by working on ourselves, the example that we show rubs off on them. So in this case, sometimes by being more generous, the other person might see some benefit in it. But the real thing is, I mean, because this can, our mind can go on and on. I mean, we have advice for everybody, don't we? Yeah? Don't you? You can see, I mean, your parents have problems. You know the faults of your parents, right? You can all tell me, I think, ask me questions about how do I correct this or that in my parents. Your spouse? Yeah? Or your boyfriend, girlfriend? Oh, they have faults. You know, how do we correct? Children, they have faults. Your teachers, your boss. Everybody has faults. And we can name them. We can talk about them. We can worry about them. We can fret about them. We can get stressed out and neurotic about them. But we're using them as a total distraction. Because, you know, we can't correct anybody else's faults. We can maybe help them and guide them and encourage them. But we need to correct our own problems and deal with ourselves. And then through our positive influence and how we affect others, you know, we become a very good agent in life to affect change. Okay. But as soon as we get this mind that, you know, you have this problem, and I want to help you solve this problem, and I know exactly how to do it, and I'm going to tell you how to live your life to solve your problem. What do you think is going to happen when you have that attitude? Does it work? No. Why? How do you feel when people come to you and they have that attitude that they know all about your life and just how you should behave to correct your problem? How do you feel? You feel trapped, don't you? You feel totally trapped. You feel coerced. The last thing you're going to do is listen to that person. You know, simply because you feel like somebody's bossing you around. So I think, you know, when we talk about compassion, compassion does not mean controlling other people's lives. You know, sometimes you, I'm so compassionate, you know, I'm going to help you. You should do this, and you should do this, and you should do that. That's not compassion. That's being, well, in the States we call it a control freak. Do you have that slang word here? Yeah, a control freak. Somebody's trying to control everybody else. No, and they're totally avoiding working on themselves. You know, and working on ourselves and what we really need to do. It's what we really need to do. Yeah?
Meditation.
Okay. So she's saying, this is a very good question because it's about practice. How do I build in a meditation on patience in addition to the stabilizing meditation that we've been doing? Okay. So what you do is, there's a couple of ways of doing it. One way is you can have one meditation session where you do it on stabilizing meditation and a second meditation where you do it on patience. Or if you don't have time to meditate twice a day, start out with a little bit of stabilizing meditation for maybe 5 minutes just to calm your mind down. and then switch and do an analytical meditation on patience to, you know, help you cultivate a mind that is able to be stable and resolute in the confront of harm or suffering. Okay? It's good at the beginning of a meditation session to know exactly what you're going to meditate on. So if you start out with stabilizing, you know, and you have the intention of doing some on patience, after you've meditated on patience, when you have that feeling of calm in your mind, then you hold that feeling of calm with concentration. So that becomes a form of stabilizing meditation. In other words, you do the analytical meditation to resolve the anger or the grudges or the resentment. And then when you have that feeling of forgiveness and that feeling of calm, then focus on that with your single-pointedness.
During meditation, now I can kind of drop my conceptualization and the inner dialogue kind of stops.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm also aware that there's this background sound, like insects. I just want to check with you whether this is the usual thing.
Okay, so you're saying that the mental chatter dies around, but you're aware of hearing things in the environment. Okay, you're kind of like the other guy who was wanting to know if you should wear earplugs. Some people are more distracted by environmental noise. Other people are more distracted by their own internal noise. Okay? Different kinds of noise. This will be the last question. Yeah? Me too. Okay, so about food in terms of eggs. Now this one I need to check, because usually in a strict Chinese vegetarian diet, you also don't eat eggs. But I've wondered if that was because of something in eggs, or because in ancient times, the eggs very often were fertilized, and eating an egg would mean killing the potential chick. Nowadays, we can get unfertilized eggs. In fact, most of the eggs you get in the supermarket are not fertilized. So, you know, certainly it wouldn't be killing if you got an unfertilized egg. It seems to me like that would be okay. Now, whether that fits into the exact definition, you know, in Chinese vegetarianism, because also onions, for example, you know, they don't involve killing, but that's because it's said that they create a lot of desire energy. But I don't know if it's said that eggs create any kind of negative energy or not. I'm not sure about that. But it wouldn't be killing if they're unfertilized eggs.